Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
You thought I was going to say good morning, Vietnam, but I'm not. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Off the Cut, episode 77. We're up in Toronto. Today is known as Tuesday, August 15th, 2023. But here in Ohio, today is respectfully dedicated to the food of the day, frozen custard.
So I was really hoping you're going to say frozen pizza.
Oh.
What is frozen custards like? Frozen yogurt? Frozen? It's actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it sounds pretty nice. I do like custard.
That was actually my first job. Was a frozen custard place called Huitz Frozen Custard. Yeah, yeah.
You're making this up. You've never talked about this before.
Yeah, it was my first job, man. Worked at a... It's basically ice cream. But don't...
Your first job was the shoe store, no?
No, that was my second job.
Okay.
Shoe store is the second job. I didn't work for shoe store until I was in college.
I had to go back and rework your biography that I've been writing now.
Yeah.
It's going to require months of rewrites, Eric. Months.
I have a big foot obsession. That's why I got into the shoe game.
For anybody who was listening to the YouTube live stream before, we were talking about, what was that TLC show? My Weird Fetish or whatever?
My Strange Obsession.
My Strange Obsession, those, yeah. So I guess yours is feet. Which, now that I think about it, it's like, I'm never going to look at a person at a shoe store the same way.
Oh, yeah.
They must all have foot fetishes. Because what else would you do?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past somebody. If you did have a foot fetish, I mean, that would be the perfect way.
Right?
To have society like just be like, man, this guy, he's really good at his job.
He sized my shoe perfectly and he gave me a little foot massage too. It's quite nice.
Wait, what about the people that do like the manicures on your feet?
Oh yeah. Pedicure. Have you ever had a pedicure?
No. But I'd be down for it. I told Miranda, she's like, would you ever go with me? I'd go, sure.
Yeah, Sophie keeps trying to, every, like, once a year, she'll ask me. She'll be like, I'm going to go get a pedicure. You want one? I'll be like, yeah, I'll come next time.
I mean, you're not going to get the one with the fish?
I don't know. No. I don't think so. That would creep me out a little bit. I'm not sure I'd be okay with that.
Like the ones at the mall kiosk where they go and, like, eat the skin off your feet and stuff?
They have those at the mall? I thought that was, like a special place you'd have to go to. Seems unhygienic to have it at the mall.
And they get them at the mall.
Huh. All right. Well, I don't know where we go from here.
Possible titles.
Yeah. Are you ready to have possible titles? The one where they have their feet eaten by fish at the mall?
Where they have fish eat their feet, foot skin, or whatever.
Okay. The one where they get a pedicure from a fish.
That's not bad. You want to hear something really gross?
Yes, please.
I know he doesn't listen to this, so I don't even mind saying it. I had a roommate that I live with after college, and it was me, Miranda, and this fella.
Oh.
And I didn't believe it the first time. You know, I was out doing something. Miranda's at home and, you know, hanging out with our roommate, watching TV or whatever. And she goes, I noticed that he like sits on the couch and like, you know, crosses his legs. And I was like, okay, like nothing weird about that. Right. And she goes, and then he kind of like picks at his toenails. I was like, well, you know, some people like, you know, instead of using nail clippers, they just pick at their nails and then like peel them off, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And she goes, no. He picks at his toes and then eats, I can't make this up, he eats the skin, like the dead skin off of his toes, like as a little snack. And then I was like, you're making this up. And then she goes, no, I swear. it wasn't more than like a week or so later that I was sitting next to him and we were just like watching football or something. I saw him do it.
Oh, and then I'm really regretting saying yes when you said you want to hear something nasty.
And then I'm also good, really good friends with his cousin. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's been doing that his entire life. I was like, that's repulsive.
So do you think it's just like a failure, like nobody grabbed a hold of him at age five and was like, hey, you can't do that?
Yeah, and like even I was like, dude, what are you doing? He goes, what? Because you're eating your foot skin. He goes,
you don't eat your foot skin?
He's like, oh, whatever, man.
You ever offered him pork rinds?
Yeah. Pork rinds. Yeah. At least this is seasoned.
Yeah, well, enough foot fetish talk. We're going to get taken off the air.
Yeah.
A couple of things I wanted to address really quick. Okay. First of all, I think 2, maybe 3 weeks back, me being in a big rush going somewhere, I accidentally uploaded the after show as the main show.
Yeah. Okay. So I was talking to Jason Grissom about this. Yeah. Did you accidentally upload the wrong one or did I mislabel the episodes?
No, I think I just uploaded the wrong one.
Okay. Because I did have a moment where I accidentally, it was 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, or whatever it was. It was a little while ago where I downloaded them to edit them, and I mixed up the names when I downloaded them. But I thought I fixed it, but I was like, okay, maybe I didn't fix it. So we'll just go ahead and say that one was your fault then.
Oh yeah, I'll totally take the blame. But okay, so okay. Anybody who like signed into the show and they're like, what the hell? Like, what happened? That was the after show.
Cool bonus.
And if you're interested in more of that, you can you can sign up for that at patreon.com/offthecuffpodcast. But no, at like 2 or 3 days later, I ended up fixing it. So if you missed that episode, that's what happens.
There was a special limited time teaser for the after show. Oh, that's what that was. Oh, that was intentional.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, you know, we're due for giving out a free after show. I think we've done that like 2 or 3 before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll do one of those coming up. We'll see.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Anything else? Oh, we should address what happened last week.
Yes. Okay. Basically, I accidentally scheduled something. So I had to go to the next city over from Toronto, which is called Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I went over to Hamilton to look after my nephew, essentially.
Oh.
And I completely forgot. So his parents were out of town. This is Sophie's brother and sister-in-law. He had a short film that he wrote, directed, and produced that was accepted into film festival. So he had to go to another city for a couple days to, you know, be there as, you know, the creator of the short. So we went out to do, you know, like a trial run of child rearing and look after her nephew for a few days. Yeah, it's a good time. But unfortunately, when we do the podcast is right when he goes to bed. I didn't want to bring all the gear with me. And then we tried to reschedule for different days and we were just busy every other day of the week. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a reality. It happens. And I can tell you what. The Green Suitors podcast wouldn't even apologize. They just tell you to F off.
That's true. That's true.
And we don't do that here.
They might even laugh at you after they told you.
They will.
Like, get the F out of here, you stupid kid.
They are actually, if you didn't know this, the guys at the Green Suitors podcast, they're the people who steal people's lunch money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bullies. Certified bullies.
Yeah. And we don't stand for that here. We are authentic, polite people. But actually, this is completely irrelevant, but I had written it down, and I wanted to hear your feedback about this, Zach.
Okay.
When you drive, and you – this is just – it was more of a shower thought, and sometimes I write these things down because I think they'd be good podcast talking notes.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive and you go to the grocery store, you go to Home Depot, you go wherever you're going, do you go nose in at the parking space or do you back it in?
Depends.
Oh, okay. I want to hear.
how much am I planning on buying? Like, for instance, the other day I went to the like the garden center and sure. I was going to get some bags of soil. Right. So I went nose in.
Oh, yeah.
That way, the back of the, I just drop the tailgate on the truck and I load it right in.
Right.
But if I'm going to the store and I'm just going to like run in and grab like a drink, then I'm going to back in so that I have a nice easy exit.
I fully agree. And every time I go somewhere, like, you know, I got the Civic, I can whip that thing around like nobody's business wherever I am. It's 1,000 times easier to just back in a parking spot. And then when you're ready to rock, you just, you go zoop and you get out.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret about driving a big truck. I think it's actually easier to back into a spot with a truck because whatever reason, I feel like I can swing a tighter corner when I'm backing up.
Well, you can because your
back end's longer.
Your back end is your pivot point.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, yeah.
And you've got more distance between your back tire and that back bumper.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of the time when I'm going nose in to a parking spot in the truck, I'll actually get jammed up.
Oh, getting a jam.
It's just like too tight of a corner to make in a, you know, 18-foot long vehicle or whatever.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time I'll just back in if, I mean, yeah, usually I'll just back in.
But like, is this like a, Miranda's like, oh, you're such a dad for backing in. I'm like, I'm just I'm being reasonable.
Yeah, I'd say you're being reasonable too. I think some people have it in their heads that it's easier to go head in to a parking spot. But I don't.
I disagree.
Yeah, I disagree too.
It may be easier to go head in, but it's harder to back out of a parking spot than it is drive straight out of a parking spot.
That's true.
I've backed into a spot for as long as I've driven.
You have to. It's a power move, no doubt.
Yeah. And here's a bonus. You know, if you're at like a big strip ball or something and you're backing into a spot that's like right adjacent to like one of those big plate glass windows.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you're backing. You look in your rearview mirror, you get to see if one of your taillights is out because you just look through the rearview mirror, look at the reflection on the plate glass window, and you're like, oh, okay, I can see, you know, I can see all my brake lights right now.
Zach, that is a level of thinking that I don't think I ever would have gotten to, but I appreciate you for that.
Dude, that's a pro dad move right there. You throw that back in Miranda's face next time.
Like, how else am I supposed to know if my taillights are out? Do you get a warning light on your instrument cluster if a taillight's out?
I don't think so. You get the thing where, and I don't even know if this is true on modern vehicles, but you used to, back in the day, it would start blinking really quickly if one of your things was out. But I don't know if that's true if you have LED lights.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think with the LEDs, because there's a cluster of them, the idea is one of them will go out before the whole thing goes out. So that gives you time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very true. I mean, I think LEDs are supposed to last like 20 years or something like that. So.
I don't know. The other thing, here's another question. As I've been perusing vehicles, I've been more aware of things around me, right? One of the things I've noticed, it seems like some cars now, when people put on their brakes, it makes like the, what's they called, the third light, the one that's like in the middle, like higher up by the dash. It goes like flash, 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 flash. Is that like a standard feature on cars now? Or is it like a special bulb that people are getting?
I think back in the day when I was building motorcycles, people used to do that. There would be like a little relay that you could wire into your brake light. And people would do that as like a modification because their thinking was that it was more noticeable.
Yeah.
Especially like on a motorcycle flash, where you only have like one small brake light.
Yeah.
It'd be like a real quick strobe to kind of get people's attention that, hey, I'm slowing down. Mm. I've never seen a car do that from the factory that I know of. So I would assume that if you're seeing that, it's somebody doing it custom, but I could be wrong.
But it's on like a Kia minivan. I'm like, nobody's customizing their Kia minivan.
That's a good point. Maybe it's a new safety feature then.
I don't know,
hacking the Kias.
Yeah. The Kia mod community is probably deep on those minivans.
There was a BMW that used to do it like back in the 90s, and the harder you pressed on the brake, the brighter the lights would get. the brake light would get. So if you just press lightly, it would come on kind of dim, and then if you press really hard, it would be really bright. So people behind you could see how hard you were braking.
Or didn't know if you were braking at all.
Yeah, true.
I need to air a grievance about brakes.
Oh, okay.
If you're one of the people who blacks out their taillights, an asshole.
Like, what about just a little tint? Is that okay?
If I can't see your damn taillights,
yeah,
you're an asshole.
That's ridiculous.
Like, I get the ones that are like fogged or smoked or whatever because you got a black car. Great. I can still see them. But yeah. Like
the one where it's like a pair of sunglasses over the entire brake light. Yeah, it's insane.
Like, have you seen the one that's it's all blacked out, but then they got like the Chevy logo cut into it?
Oh yeah, ooh, yeah.
That's a classy gentleman. When you see that, you're like, I bet that guy eats caviar. He's probably wearing a monocle while he's driving.
I bet it's the complete opposite.
I know. That's what
I've also seen. The Volkswagen Beetles that have like the flowers over the taillights too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, those are hot.
The
eyelashes.
Yeah.
Oh, the eyelashes. That's such a mom move. That's like a granola mom move, I think. There was a Mini, the Austin Mini had the shape of half of the Union Jack on the brake lights.
Oh really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, I guess, a throwback to Mini's English heritage, even though it's a German company now.
Huh.
Have you seen, I think it was I think it might have been a Kia. I don't know. But there was this person selling these little, what they called bling rings that go over the keyhole where you put your keys into the ignition.
Okay.
And because it was made out of metal, it was blocking the transmission of the keys to the car, and you couldn't start the car.
That's
a little metal ring was in the way.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, there's like a little RFID chip in a lot of car keys. And it's like an anti-theft thing so that you can't just jam a screwdriver into the ignition cylinder and twist it that way. Mm. You need to pair that RFID chip in the key, like the key fob, with the one in the steering column in order to get it to turn over. But yeah, it sounds like it blocked that. So it was like a little... Yeah. That's
just
funny.
Like a little metal ring.
That's nuts. That's nuts. Well, I had a question. I don't. Somebody asked. I think it was on Instagram, and I forgot who it was. I didn't write it down, but I thought it was a really good question. I thought it'd be a really good topic of conversation tonight.
Let's do it.
So I didn't write down exactly what it was. I'm paraphrasing it. It was basically like, what obstacles do the two of us constantly face in the shop? More specifically, it was like, you know, while you're building stuff. And the idea was like, do you ever like not have the right tool or accessory for something and always have to do a workaround?
Yeah.
And then once you finally go out and spend the money, you're like, why the hell did I take so long to fix that? Is there anything that comes to mind for you? And it can be like you solved it already. That's fine too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like that happens very frequently to me. And I try and think of it beforehand. So I'm trying to think of like a good example of it. But I'm just always kind of on the lookout for parts of projects that I am consistently hitting a roadblock with. I mean, the classic one is like sanding. It just, you know, nobody really likes sanding that much. It takes a lot of time. So I went out and bought a 6-inch sander that sands way faster. I'm trying to think. You know, I'm so guilty of having like a mismatch of drill bits and impact bits and like Allen keys and stuff like that. And so one day I just went out and bought a complete set of everything. Drill bits, new impact bits, new like a Swiss Army knife with all the different Allen
heads. Oh yeah.
Because those are the types of things that I would just spend, you know, I would tear apart the shop being like, I need a number 2 Phillips head impact bit right now. And I can't find one anywhere.
Right. Right.
And now I'm really religious about like take it out of the gun, put it back in the slot, like make sure it's there for next time. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any.
Ooh, that's a good one, though. That's a good one.
Yeah, it wasn't expensive either. It was like, you know, $40 to get like everything completely outfitted. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay. The one thing that came up to my mind and is one that I'm still battling is when you said Sanders. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a 6-inch Rotex.
Yeah.
And I also have a 5-inch like Makita, whatever the hell, random orbit sander. I have so much effing 5-inch sandpaper discs that in my head, I'm like, well, shouldn't I use these? Or do I just get rid of the 5-inch sander and then whenever I need to hand sand something, use the 5-inch discs? Or do I just do some like massive giveaway thing and be like, here's just a boatload of 5-inch paper?
That's the one. Give away, just do, you know, like find somebody in your area who would appreciate the 5-inch sander. Like, here's a 5-inch sander, and also here's a whole bunch of discs to go with it.
Because it works great.
Dude, I have a drawer full of 5-inch sanders, and I've not touched them in 2 years. I had my friend wanted me to cut some shelves for him, so I brought him over to the shop. I was trying to pawn off tools on him. I'm like, dude, take a sander. Just take a sander.
Right.
I was like, here, take a tool bag. Like, it was pretty comical. I couldn't get him to take anything. It's really annoying. People are really reluctant to take free tools sometimes.
I think people just think it's trash. Like, people are like, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just wanted to give it to somebody. And like, I've given stuff to friends before, and I'm like, hey, listen, I need to get rid of this, but I physically can't throw it in the trash. So please take it from me. And if you don't want it, just throw it in the trash and don't tell me. It'll make me feel so much better.
I have a box in the shop that's like literally like tools to give away, like extra tools.
Yeah.
I keep telling myself I'm going to like put them up on eBay or something like that. But just whenever somebody comes through the shop, I'm like, take some of these tools.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
Bring them to Workbench Con next year.
Those people don't want them.
Nobody wants a 5-inch sander. But yeah. I was working on sanding down the big panel for like the retrying the power carve table thing, right? And I was like, okay, I'm gonna sand it to like 120 before I power carve it, because you're not gonna be carving everything.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it with the 5-inch sander. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, just what like a waste of time.
Yeah, you're like your 6-inch sander is looking over from the shelf jealously at you. Like, what am I, shoplifter?
And I've got the Rotex that I could like sand that whole thing in a minute and a half with each grit.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm doing the 5-inch sander and I'm, you know, going slow as hell, and it's like 5 minutes on each grit. I'm like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm. But in a similar vein to my last thing, just like cheap little things that you always find yourself looking for around the shop, like tape measures, safety glasses. Just buy a bunch of them, scatter them around.
Uh-huh.
And that way you're never looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have one at every cut station. I have like a tape measure, safety glasses, and like a little respirator at every station in my shop.
Yeah. One of the things I've started to do my new table saw is like on the fence.
Yeah.
I like throw like a bunch of pencils. I throw like one of the woodpecker's little 3-inch square thingies, so I can, if it has like built-in setup blocks in it. Like, I have tape measures there. I have like a classic pencil with an eraser on it, so if I have tiny parts, I can use that for like some little grip and stuff.
Yeah,
nice. And they're all over the place. Like, they're on the floor. I just have pencils and stuff, because like I'll look and I'll be like, ah, there we go. There's one. Like,
when I said scatter them around, you took that quite literally.
No, mine are literally on the floor. I just get mad. I'm filming something. I get mad, and I just take a pencil and jettison it across the shop. Be like,
yeah,
damn it. I was enjoying my music, and then I got hit with this stupid Grain Suitors podcast. Available on Apple and Spotify, by the way.
Yeah, wherever good podcasts are found.
Yeah. So, okay, Sanders, one that I battled. You said Bit Tips was one that you battled, but like Bit Tips, drill bits that you battled. Any others you can think of?
There must be some. I feel like I'm really letting this question down. I feel like I have a better answer for this.
not being precious with consumables.
Oh, yeah.
Not being precious with your consumables. You got blue tape, you're going to use it, just go for it, use it. You got gloves, you're going to use them, just use them. Don't worry about going through them. They can all be replaced.
Oh, dude, I definitely flip nitrile gloves inside out.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And then I take my hand out of it. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah.
You just stick your hand into a bunch of, like, half-cured epoxy.
Yeah.
Well, because Kristen from Total Boat won't send them out anymore. She's like, people abuse the gloves.
What, would they send you free gloves?
Oh, they'd send you anything on their website.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's one time I got 8 boxes of gloves.
I've been paying for nitrile gloves like an idiot.
They're expensive, man. They're like 25 bucks a box.
I know. Yeah, what does that work out to? I guess that's like 25 cents. No, wait, that math doesn't check out.
Somebody so you get about 100 pairs for about $25, right?
25 cents of a glove, yeah.
Yeah, 25 cents a glove. Oh, that does work.
A pair. But, okay, as soon as you say it like that, you're like, Eric, stop. Throw it out as a quarter. Yeah. Like
that and sandpaper.
Sandpaper,
Afraid to throw it away.
Also, little mixing buckets. I went on Amazon. I just ordered a stack of 50 mixing buckets, and they have, like, common ratios on the side of them and stuff. Yeah. So, like, when you're, mixing up epoxy or whatever, just, once you're done with it, throw it away. I know it's a little bit wasteful, but the alternative is like trying to clean epoxy out of like a little bucket or something. Hell no. It's just, exactly.
Because then you just like, if you pour it a little too much, you just leave it in a cup, let it harden, throw it out.
Exactly. Yeah.
But those you can get from Total Boat. You order epoxy, they send you too many of those cups.
Oh, well, I'm there for it. I like that.
Yeah. What was the other one I was thinking of? Sandpaper. Mm-hmm. Going back to sandpaper, but you're talking about consumables. Serious question, and you guys will probably make fun of me if you know the answer. How do I know it's time to change sandpaper?
I don't know. Yeah, it's not a dumb question at all. Usually I just take my hand and like run it over. Is this, like, does it still feel kind of sandy? If so, then I keep using it.
Yeah, but it's not as sharp as it initially was. But it's like, you're like, it's still pretty rough. Like, it's got to be doing something to the wood.
Well, that's the thing.
If I feel like the sanding's taking too long and I swap out the disc and it does a little better, then I know I've done the right thing.
Well, the thing is, like, nothing feels as sharp as unused sandpaper. And, like, sandpaper gets to a steady state after, like, 5 to 10 minutes of using it, I find.
A steady state, you said?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. Assuming, say you take a new sanding pad or piece of sandpaper, it's at like 100% when you start using it, like maximum sharpness.
Yeah.
Then you use it for like 5 to 10 minutes, it gets to like 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like a very slow drop off from that 80.
You're right.
It's like a lithium battery. It just
goes
and it's nothing.
Exactly. Then it's like, it's good for a while. I actually find with sanding discs, usually the disc will like tear or in some other way deform before it stops actually being able to sand.
Hmm.
Yeah, truly, once I start to see the edges wearing out, that's when I replace it.
Yeah.
Oh, I probably replace my sandpaper way faster than that.
Yeah.
I mean, not kidding. But it's honestly because I have so much of it in the 5-inch, I'm like, F it, I'll just get a new one.
Yeah. When I got my 6-inch sander, because I got it from, Mark from Remarkable Woodworks hooked me up with one, the Merca Duros. And when I got it, they gave me like a box of 50 discs in every single grit they had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I just have this big collection and I'm just dreading the day when it runs out because I will have to start buying my own sandpaper again.
No.
It's so luxurious to just go in there and just know that I have like, big stack of every single one.
Dude, what you really need to get is go on Festool and get their sustainer organizer that comes outfitted with all their sandpaper.
Oh.
It's actually a pretty good deal. And you get all of your sandpaper at once, and it comes in an organizer bin.
That's kind of nice.
It's kind of nice, dude. I've got it, and for the 6-inch, I like it a lot.
I have it for the 3-inch one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I want to get that sandpaper the J-Cats likes. I've been meaning that's like being like on my to buy list forever.
The Cubitron
stuff.
Hmm? The purple one with the little zigzags. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the one where he did it in his test and it was like the best one out of every single.
So I'll give my flat surfaces fantastic. As soon as you start doing it on anything that has like an edge, or mm-hmm. like you can stand like over a dado or something, if it catches anything, it tears really easily. But if you're doing tabletop, fantastic.
Okay. Hey, you might want to check the connection on your microphone there. It's been a little wonky. We're losing your audio a little bit. I use that Mirka Arbonet, whatever it's called, and I find the same thing. Anytime I'm standing over a dado or anything where there's a sharp edge, it can often get caught on it, and it just tears itself. Give us a little test. Let's see if your mic's fixed. No? Oh, he's no, we can't hear you at all. He's not frozen. He's there, but...
He's playing.
It's...
There we go.
No.
Kind of.
I mean, I can hear you tapping on it. I can hear you tapping on it.
What the hell?
Okay, now you seem okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
That it?
You're back.
Can you hear me blowing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is this better now?
No. No, you're definitely going through the right mic.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Green Suitors podcast.
Do you think they have less technical issues or more technical issues than us?
I mean, they're a bunch of old men.
Okay, so more.
They don't know.
Do you think they care if they have technical issues?
I don't think they know.
Oh, man.
But you were talking sandpaper. Sorry, before I rudely cut out.
Yeah, we were talking about sandpaper tearing.
Yeah. I mean, I still have... So I have a bunch of that purple 3M extracts stuff that J-Cats sent me. Like I said, it works really well on flat surfaces. Don't love it for curves. I also have a bunch of the blue Festool stuff, like their regular sandpaper.
Yeah.
That works pretty well.
Yeah.
And then I also have this green stuff called Serious Grit. I think I have a code for them.
Okay.
I don't know if I've ever sold any of their commission stuff, but honestly, their paper works really well and it's pretty cheap.
Does that 3M stuff, does that come in 6-inch?
Yes, it does.
What was it called?
3M Extract. Yeah. It's like the purple. It looks like it's got like little zigzags on it.
Does J-Cat sell that on the store?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll order some from him.
Yeah. It's pretty good price, if I'm not mistaken. It's like
I remember that being
5 cents a sheet?
Yeah, I remember that being like a big thing. It was one of the cheaper ones, too, in his testing.
Yeah. It's nice. I like it.
Oh, they sell it on Amazon. Oh.
It's cheaper on Amazon, but if you want to support J-Cats, it's like $2 more to go through him or something.
Oh, okay. All right.
But you might have to pay like import fees and all that kind of stuff and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Canada.
Canada, am I right?
It's brutal.
Well, it all goes back to Air Canada anyways.
Air Canada. Don't fly Air Canada.
Don't fly
Randy
Air Canada.
As Randy Wilson in the live chat says, don't fly Air Canada.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate the support.
But so I was trying to cleverly segue before I lost my connection or whatever was going on to obstacles that I was facing. And what I was trying to segue it in, but I did a poor job, was there's a lot of like just small things where I'm like, I wish I had a way to like organize this tiny thing. I wish I had this little piece that could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just drives you nuts. And that's why I'm so pumped that my first 3D printer is coming, I think, tomorrow?
Mine's coming on the end of the week, I think. I got a DHL. Is it coming from DHL?
Yeah. From Hong Kong somewhere. So Zach and I are getting the same 3D printer.
Yeah.
We
are getting the Creality K1 Max.
So Is that a good one? Like, I know nothing. They were like, do you want this printer? And I was like, oh, it's like $1,000. It's got to be decent.
Yeah, so Creality is very well known for their Ender line of 3D printers, which is kind of like the it's kind of like the entry level. It's about $300. They're pretty popular, but they're also known to be a bit finicky. Like, you have to spend some time and get it to work. Okay. Whereas this new one, the K1 series that they're coming out with, is supposed to be much more user friendly. But it's like, we're going to get some of the first units, so I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows whether or not this one's any good just yet. Although I was talking to Brad from Fix This Build That, and he has the regular K1, and he was saying he likes it quite a bit. Okay. So things are looking good.
I'm excited for myself because, one, I have never, ever in my life used a 3D printer.
Yeah.
I am not familiar with 3D printing whatsoever. And I'm specifically not going out and, like, looking at reviews, looking at, like, exactly how do I set this thing up. I want to know from someone who has never used one before, like, how fast can I get set up with this thing? And, like, to the point where I'm like, oh, I can print something. I'm excited to see.
I would suspect it going from like setup to your first print, maybe like a couple hours.
Okay.
Like, I'm sure there, like, it'll probably come with some, like, when I got my Bamboo Labs purchase, it had like a bunch of things in it. Like, it had a bunch of like 3D models in it that you could print as test prints right away.
Okay.
So if you wanted to do something like that, I don't know, maybe even like 15 minutes. Like, literally just plug it in, put in your filament, and do one of the test ones. But to do, like, one of your own creations, probably, like, an hour, 2 hours, something like that. It'll be surprisingly quick, I think.
Okay.
So pretty plug-and-play?
Pretty plug-and-play at this point, yeah. I mean, does it come with filament? It should. I think they'll probably, again, when I got my Bamboo Labs one, they sent me like a box of filament, too, just to, like, kind of get me up and running. So
right, and then I'm sure I'll have to buy something online.
Yeah, but you can get it on Amazon. You can get it wherever. It's pretty cheap. It's pretty ubiquitous at this point.
So teach me, learn me 3D printers.
Learn me 3D printers.
So I get a 3D printer.
Yeah.
I know I have to buy filament, which for everybody out there is basically like, think of it as like ink, but it's like a spool of plastic. It looks like weed whacker line, basically.
Yeah, here, hold on. Let me grab a spool.
So I know that you can get different plastics.
Yes.
Is there like a table I can look up that's like, this plastic is really good for this, this plastic is good for this? Like,
there is a great YouTube video. It's not really a table. Hold on, let me look this up. I was talking about this the other day.
Keep talking. So I know that you can get some filaments that would be like super, super rigid, but can be brittle. But then you can get some that are like for a product that you do want it to have a little bit of flex. So that's like a little bit more elasticy in a sense.
So there's a YouTube video called I Tested Almost Every Filament on Amazon by Zach Friedman.
Okay.
And he does a great job of just explaining the pros and the cons of like, my God, the video probably has like 20 different types of filaments on it.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. It's 42 minutes long, so you might want to skip around a little bit. But I will say that basically when you're first starting with 3D printing, the kind of easy mode is PLA. Yeah, that's
I've heard of that.
So PLA is kind of like your standard. It's cheap. It's ubiquitous. Most printers print it without any problem. You don't have to do anything crazy to get it going. And it's like, it's decently strong. I wouldn't put it in like, I wouldn't make a car part out of it.
Okay.
But if you're just looking for like a little jig or a little doodad around the shop, it'll probably get the job done. And then
to make some like half inch spacer blocks or whatever, like go for that.
Exactly. It's cheap. Okay. It's easy to work with. It's not the strongest, but it's also not like crazy brittle or anything like that. Yeah.
So you can get like Kevlar ones, can't you? Or like something that have like fiberglass or something in them?
Well, and that's where it starts to get a little bit weird, right? Like there's carbon fiber reinforced PLA. Okay. So there's, they'll have like, and then there's also like PLA plus, and there's, so there's all these things where they start alloying. I mean, alloying isn't really the right term, but they'll start mixing in aggregates that make the plastic stronger.
Okay.
So you start with a base plastic, and then you can kind of add things to it to change the characteristics of it. They even have PLA that has wood fiber in it so that you can stain it with stains.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so that's neat. That's neat.
There's like, there's these base plastics, and then there's almost like modifiers that they mix into them. So it gets, okay, it can get away from you pretty quickly. But
so learn about all of the different filaments, but unless I'm making something where structural soundness of the piece is super, super critical, when I first start out, just kind of buy whatever is cheap just to kind of screw around with it. And then once just, I'm like, okay, I need to, it needs to be this, this specific strength or like have this characteristic, then I would get a specific roll.
Exactly. Buy yourself like a couple rolls of PLA, start with those. Okay. And then when you run into a scenario where you're like, okay, the PLA is not working for me, I need to find, like, I need something that's more flexible, or I need something that's more heat resistant. Then you can start branching out into other stuff.
Okay. Filaments. Okay. Other filament question. Mm-hmm. Again, this is coming. I know nothing about 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter what brand I buy?
It kind of does.
Okay.
Different brands will have slightly different characteristics. So not every PLA plastic will print at the exact same temperature.
Oh, different chemical characteristics of the plastic.
Exactly. And I think that, again, comes back to whatever they're alloying into it. Depending on what their proprietary mix is, you might have to adjust it. Luckily, it's usually printed right on. Yeah, like, see, this spool right here says 220 to 230 degrees Celsius. So that's the so usually it's very clear like what it is. But usually they give you a range, too. So you might have to play around with it a little bit. You might do a print and be like, oh, this is not as clean as I would like it to be, so I'll try bumping up the temperature 5 degrees and see if that makes it any better, or bumping it down 5 degrees.
So that would, the temperature would be like an input, when a user input when I go to print. It's just like, okay, you know.
Okay,
it's like selecting your paper size on your printer.
Exactly. So when you create, so the first thing you'll do is you go in Fusion, you'll create a model of whatever you want to print. Then you're going to go file 3D print, and it's going to send it to the software for your 3D printer. That's called a slicer.
The software is the slicer. Okay.
So the slicer will take your 3D model and slice it into many thin layers that the 3D printer can then print, right? And within this slicer, you tell it what filament or what plastic you're printing with and what settings you want it to print at.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And does each 3D printer, like, is this Creality thing? Does it have its own slicer?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Could I use a different slicer on this thing?
You could. I mean, it depends how, again, because I don't have it in my hand. I don't know how locked down it is.
Okay.
But the Bamboo Labs slicer that I use for my Bamboo Labs printers, I've noticed there's a little setting in there where you can set it to run a Creality Ender 3D printer. So it is, they are compatible across.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so
you're holding up that.
Oh, what? Go ahead. No, you go there.
I was going to say, you're holding up that roll of filament there. Mm-hmm. And it says the temperature in Celsius.
Yeah.
Now, if, whenever Eric gets them here in the States, is it going to show it in freedom units, or is it still going to be in metric?
Oh,
that's a good question. I would suspect it might actually be in Celsius. You guys, you might have to do a little bit of metric learning.
Some math.
I honestly, when I do a lot of my 3D models now, I'm normally like an inches and feet type of guy. But when I've been doing the 3D models, I've been working a lot in millimeters and centimeters.
Because you use calipers, right?
Exactly. And I mean, calipers, yeah, it's the smaller units thing. Once you start, like, it's, I don't know, millimeters is effective for small measurements, I find. It's just more intuitive to me.
This was 0.01 1-7 inches. This is like,
yeah. Or
stop
it could be
picking around with this.
Yeah, or it could be 1.25 millimeters.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I am almost finished with my. Actually, I finished the design portion of that that class, the Fusion 360 class. I was.
Yeah. Thank you for sending that to me, by the way.
Yeah. For sure. I'm working on the one now where it's just like, okay, you've designed something. Now, how do we like get all these dimension drawings and stuff out of it? Because I think it'll be really helpful to be able to like make my own woodworking plans.
Yeah.
In Fusion. That yeah. I believe if I then go change the size of one board, it automatically updates the plans as well.
Ooh, is that a feature?
Is that right,
have?
Derek?
I think so. Yeah. Like if you set it up right, then you can have it. You can have a list of all the components and their sizes.
Yeah, and like cool. The drawing workspace, I think, is what it's called, where like you can do orthographic views and like dimension them and like put text boxes in places and stuff like that. Yeah. I just started that lesson, so I'm not through it, but it appears that you can do that.
I'm gonna have to play around with that a little bit more.
Yeah, have you jumped in that class yet, or did you poke around in it?
I haven't yet. No.
Yeah.
Well, check I will it out. Soon because. So I just finished doing my my coffee table build, and I was thinking I should make a set of plans for it. I did model it all in Fusion 360, so I think I might jump into that course and make a set of plans that I sell in my Etsy store.
It's not a bad idea. I've also considered. Do you remember the Brett Cope that we met at Workbench Con? The guy that did all the plans, the architect guy.
Yeah.
I've considered just calling him and be like, hey, dude, can I pay you like $200 or something? I don't know, whatever fair sum of money. And like, can I basically like I model the thing in Fusion?
And then
can we jump on a call and can you like show me how you would make the plans? And because if he does it all the time, I'm sure he has some great best practices.
True. Might not want to share those with you, though.
You're absolutely right. But it's just like. I like to make that for myself.
Yeah.
And I know I should outsource it, but
yeah. It's yeah. I wonder why I should look on like Upwork and Fiverr and see if there's any guys out there. Be like, hey, if I send you a Fusion 360 file and also like this video of me making the thing, can you create a set of plans for me?
It's not a bad idea. Yeah. The only thing is I like to have the plans immediately ready for purchase when the video goes live, because how many people are like, oh, that was a dope project. I'll come back in 3 weeks and see if my plans are ready.
Literally nobody ever.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, you have to have worth it.
Do I what?
Do you find the plans worth the time investment to make and then turn around and sell?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
On projects that go well, oh, absolutely. Oh, I still have ones. Like, do my cornhole boards, I still sell... I don't know, 5 to 10 of those a month. And then in the summer, it goes like 10, 20, 30 a month. And it's a project that I did 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. Paying dividends.
Right. And it's one of those things, like you can look up the dimensions for cornhole boards, no problem. But if it's like, okay, I watched this video, you know, maybe I like the way this guy did this. I'll just get it. Like I'm here. Like I'll just download it and be done.
Yeah.
You know, I find it, but also I have some that I have never sold a single plan.
Right.
So if you make one plan and then get mad that you're not selling anything, like you got to make a lot. It's kind of like YouTube videos.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like I've been selling some stuff through my Etsy store, but, and it hasn't been like, it's been going okay. Like I get a few sales here and there, but it hasn't been gangbusters or anything like that. And I'm wondering like, okay, is that just because these are just my first couple things that I've sold on there? Like, do I need to kind of have a little bit of an established track record before people are willing to buy stuff from me?
I mean, it probably doesn't hurt on Etsy. Like if people go to your store and it says 2 sales, people are like,
exactly. Right.
But if they're
2 years, he's only got 2 sales.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
But I also think that you have a little bit of an established, like, credential as far as, like, oh, you know, this guy's got, like, you know, 100,000-200,000 YouTube subs, you know, like I know this guy and mm-hmm. it's just his Etsy mm-hmm. store. Like I would trust that way more than just like me stumbling upon your store and be like, oh, but two sales. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you mention your channel on your store?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my store is pretty bare bones right now. It's got like three listings. I don't know if I've even completed like the profile or anything like that. Cause I was just assuming all my sales would just come from YouTube referrals.
Yeah. Yeah. I have all of my plans up on my Etsy. And I truly think the only one that 99% of my Etsy sales are for the flip top tool cart.
Right. Right.
But I have all of my other plans on there, but I don't know. I sell maybe 3 to 5 plans a month on Etsy. Like it's not okay. much, but it's still like,
yeah, it's still
cover some right. expenses, right?
Yeah, totally. All those nitrile gloves in the shop, right?
All those nitrile gloves, baby. I'm gonna reuse them. Plans, yeah.
Of all your
yeah.
plans, would you say there's any specific style or type that stands out and sells better than others? Like shop projects versus
shop
like
projects, hand down.
Shop projects,
yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah. That's what I figured.
And that pricing template is. Just still goes to the moon.
Oh yeah.
Nice. Okay. Should I bother to make a set of plans for this coffee table then?
Couldn't hurt.
I mean,
couldn't hurt, but it's time, no. right?
That's true. You're absolutely That's true. Right. But you never know. Like I have some pieces of furniture that do really well, but shop projects definitely do the best. But So you're talking about this. This is like the tech coffee table or whatever, right?
Yeah, I actually spent all day today setting it up, and I was it's getting very frustrated by the end of it. But yeah, it's got a whole bunch of stuff crammed into it.
Let's be real about this. It's a dope project. I think it's going to do really well. How many people are going to want to build that?
Yeah,
very few.
Right.
And so that's why. If you simplified those plans and removed all the electronic components and just made it a coffee table, would it be something that people would be interested in building on its own?
I mean, it would be kind of like it's storage, right? Like if you took out all the electronics in it, it's basically a box with lift top that you can put, you know, whatever magazines or doilies or whatever to help people put underneath their coffee table.
Feet photos,
yeah.
See, I don't know. I think you could be like, you know, I made the plans to make this coffee table, but I am customizing it to the ultimate home theater coffee table. You don't have to be like, okay, here's where I put this power outlet and here's where I snake this cord through. Like, no one's going to give a shit about that.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. And like, it's kind of a multidisciplinary project too, because like the bottom of it, like the bottom panel, I have all these like cutouts for wires and stuff, and I cut it all on the CNC. So automatically, like I feel like I'm alienating a large portion of people there. But at the same time, you could also just, rather than using a CNC, you could just use a hole saw and skip like, you know, the LED lighting that I integrated into the bottom of it and whatever.
See, this is where I kind of get caught hung up on the idea of for very broad sweeping projects like a flip top tool cart or a clamp rack. I should do plans like traditional woodworking plans for those. But for more specific project, do I go into like almost a video course that teaches you how to do it so that I know that I'm going to have like, you know, you're going to have substantially less people want to build this multimedia coffee table, but of the folks that are interested in it, would those people pay a significantly larger amount of money to get even more direction? Almost where you do like a, you know, a 30-minute YouTube video, but then you do like a 2.5 hour long video course.
Yeah. You know, I actually did think about doing that in the early days of my YouTube career. I thought I might have like a short version and a long version of every video. Like I would have like a short one that's like the fun to watch one. And then I would have the long one where I'd be like, I cut this piece to 24 inches long by an inch and a half, where it's like very specific.
Like what Mark Spagnuolo does.
Does he do that?
Yeah, that's his like his woodworking courses things.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And same with Chris from Four Eyes Furniture.
Right.
He does that as well. Like, he does like the 20-30 minute YouTube cut, but then we'll do like a 2 or 3 hour long video course where, again, it goes through like, this was cut to 31.5 inches and you have to make sure to put this bevel on here. And like, but you know, these courses are like $100-$200.
Really? Okay. I wonder what the conversion rate is. Like, you know, if you get, if you have a couple hundred thousand people watch your video, do you get, you know, 20 people 100? Who are willing to spend a couple $100 on it? I'd be interested to know.
I don't know. But there's so much time that goes into that ahead of time.
Like, I even just like, I'm getting stressed out thinking about like recording a different set of voiceovers that go more in depth into it. And then you'd have to film things differently too, right? Like, every cut you make has to be filmed. Like, when I was making this coffee table, I get like 5 or 6 clips of me cutting and be like, that's good enough. Like,
right. Yeah.
You get the gist.
Yeah, you get the gist, right? Like, and then tough. I went to my table saw and cut these pieces. Like, that's, I just need enough clips to cover that.
It's a weird balance because the plans definitely do work out. But again, it kind of gets us to back to that thing of like, are you wasting time doing it? Or like, how can you maximize the effort and like, you know, time that you put in and maximize the best return out of that?
Yeah, I know.
I don't think anyone has the right answer. I think it's something that you have to constantly tweak and work on and, you know, see just what works for you.
That's why I was thinking, you know, I would be much more into having somebody else do it. And I'd be willing to take like the, you know, financial hit. Like, even if I had to pay somebody $500-$600 to make a set of plans for me, at least run one as a trial and see,
right,
see what happens.
Right.
Yeah.
And this, so this also gets to the advice that we always give people. Do you want to do that? Like, would you have fun in pleasure in making that, or does that sound like an absolute drag to do?
Yeah,
be honest, like, would you want to make a 3-hour video course on that table?
That kind of sounds like a drag to me.
Yeah,
so don't do it.
Yeah
If it's a chore you're gonna give good up advice on it, or it's gonna take way too long.
Right.
Yeah
It was like my second YouTube channel where I did the shop only sounds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make another one of those videos.
Oh, you've
but it's still up there.
It's still up there. Are you getting much traction on that channel?
I have no idea. I haven't checked it in months.
You got it monetized pretty quickly, though, didn't you?
I don't think I have enough watch hours.
Oh, okay. Maybe you got up to the subscriber thing quickly.
5,600 subscribers.
Okay.
And I'm only at 1,400 watch hours, so I'm like a quarter of the way on the watch hours.
When you were doing the cuts with just shop sounds, would you make the videos longer?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So it's just like background noise, right?
Oh yeah.
Interesting.
Apparently, I uploaded one 8 days ago. I don't know. No, I guess I did I did my mobile bandsaw cart a month ago. Okay. But that only got 274 views. And then I did my dining table one 3 months ago at 390 views. But then I did some other ones when I first started the channel. They got like 4,500, 2,700, 7,200. Yeah, but it's mostly just a bunch of shorts on there.
I see. Yeah, look, Dirk's got pulled up right now. Yeah. So you have 5 full-length videos.
Yeah, 5 full-length videos. I got a boatload of shorts, and some of the shorts do pretty well. It's just, like, they don't pay you for it. So I was like,
yeah.
And to be honest with you, like, I really wasn't enjoying it. So I was
there you go.
I don't know. I'm not going to delete it. Like, I mean, that's some good traction to start with.
Yeah.
I thought you were just reposting them without the track over it. You talking over it.
That's not a bad idea. But see, the problem is, would you just have it totally silent, or do I just find some like generic music and just play the music over it?
I don't know. Music is kind of polarizing sometimes. I think a lot of people just want to hear the shop sounds.
Yeah.
But what if what if I don't have the shop sounds? Then I have to pull it from another clip. I'm like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, yeah. That happens to me.
You don't mute them on your timeline. You don't mute those shots of you cutting things? Or you just...
No, sometimes, sometimes I'll switch. I try to plug in my shotgun mic. If I would accidentally, do something and be like, oh, crap! Like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh! It would capture that.
Yeah.
But then usually... Then I'll swap the little cord over from the shotgun mic, which for everybody listening is a big mic that you put on top of your camera that just catches all of the noise in the area. Yeah, it's directional. And then I'll take the cord from that and plug it into my wireless receiver that I clip onto my shirt to talk and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'll forget to swap the cord back over to the shotgun mic, so I'll have half of a video that just has no ambient noise.
Yeah.
And now I'm how do I do a shop only, tool only noise video?
Yeah. Yeah. I do that a lot. I'm so lazy. I don't even do the shotgun mic. If I'm just going to get tool sounds, I'll just unplug my wireless transmitter and just use the built-in.
It's good enough, right?
It's for shop sounds. It's okay, you don't need the best audio quality to get the sound of a table saw, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I guess worst case scenario, even if it was you're filming yourself, I don't know, pouring epoxy, and then you're like, oh my gosh, it's spilling, it's spilling. You could still know what was going on and hear it. And if it was bad audio, it's okay, I know that Zach didn't plan this and
Exactly, yeah.
I can get over that.
Actually, what would you say? Funnier, realer in one way.
Right.
What would you say is probably the best mic for picking up those shop sounds?
Honestly, dude, I've just rocked the lavalier mic. I never use a shotgun mic these days. Because you're always pretty close to the tool. Good? Yeah, it's the same distance from your face to the tool, or, relatively speaking. It's pretty close.
My shotgun mic, I've noticed sometimes, and maybe it's the interference from my camera, but sometimes I hear click, 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 click. Is that your camera's giving off Bluetooth or something like that?
I had a camera. I don't know if my current one does it, but I had a camera that had Bluetooth, and whenever I had the Bluetooth turned on, I would pick up interference that sounded exactly like that on the shotgun mic.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think it makes me not feel crazy, I suppose.
Yeah, just turn off the Bluetooth on your camera. And you know what? It was a Panasonic camera that I had that would do that. So, yeah.
It was the cheap Rode one anyway. It was what I had first got when I started filming on my iPhone. And then he had to get some weird cord to connect to the iPhone with that. Yeah. Yeah, it was challenging. Yeah. Those are the days when you started, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got exciting news. I guess it's kind of exciting. Ooh. I'm getting a that Harvey bandsaw and dust collector thing next month.
Is it the dust collector huge, or do they have a smaller one?
I don't know.
Okay, all right. You didn't even you
I didn't measure the tool it
without even looking at how big it was.
Sure did.
Where are you gonna put it?
I don't know.
Okay. Right.
I don't even know if I can turn it on.
Yeah, it might be 220.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay, all right. Well, at least you got the Jackery thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to see, if it runs off of that. And if not, well.
Find out. That'd be kind of cool if it did, because you don't always need dust collection for that long. So if you just ran the dust collection off the Jackery.
Dude, I've been running my planer off the Jackery.
Yeah.
It runs better off the Jackery than it does.
Because it can peak more.
Right. Because it's the only thing running off of that. And, dude, I could run it for, I don't know, probably, no exaggeration, 2 hours on that Jackery.
That's pretty crazy.
That thing is nuts. But how is the Jackery expensive?
Yeah, I think I looked into it once before. I think it's $1,000 or something.
What?
I think so. Yeah.
No.
They're pricey.
I got the 3000 Pro or Plus or something.
Not everybody gets one sent to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Is it really that? I thought it was like $300 or $400.
Oh, four G's.
Wow.
$4,000?
For the 3000 Pro portable power station.
No wonder they sponsor so many YouTube videos. If they sell one of them, they clean up.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably making pretty good margins. Look at that. It's got a 220 thing right on it.
Yeah, it has it. Okay, wait. Yeah. Just 3,000. Oh, that's 4,000 Canadian.
Yeah. So no, what is it?
4,000 US.
Oh. Really?
No, I think
that comes with some like solar panels. That comes
with the solar panels.
Yeah, this one comes with solar panels.
I just have like the unit thingy. And it's $2,800.
I thought you had like a little extension pack for it too.
I got the battery too, but I don't use it because the cord's too thick.
So the 3,000 is 2,800.
Oh my god! So can this run 220 volts? It has the plug for it. Do you think it'll?
It's got that plug. Must.
Do you think it'll work for running a dust collector? All right, yeah, I gotta know.
Tech specs.
Because that's what I want to know. I'm like, if I get this, will it work? Because that'd be really awkward if I get it. And then Harvey's like, can you make some videos of you using it? And I'm like,
nope,
I can't.
Well, on here it says the AC output is 120 volts, 60 hertz, 25 amps max. AC output is 120 volts, 60 hertz, 20 amps max. So this is two different. That.
Oh yeah.
So it doesn't do 220.
Yeah, but it's got the 220 plug right there on the front of it.
Yeah, it's got. Doesn't it? That's number six. They list that as an AC output. That's the one that only goes to 120.
Is that like a 25 amp plug?
It's a 25 amp, and the other ones are 20. So that's the difference.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So the answer is no, I can't turn.
I wonder, can you get a transformer that'll transform 120 to 220, 110 to 220? Like, you wouldn't get the same amount of amps, like, but you might not need it.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Frequently asked questions.
I mean, you better believe I'm going to try plugging it in and see what happens.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, they do make little transformers. So I think you probably drop some amps.
But so what is this something I basically would plug into the Jackery and then plug the dust collector into this thingy?
Yeah.
How much does one of those bad boys run me?
I'm looking at one on Amazon right now that's $100 Canadian.
Oh, okay. So send me the link. Bad. I'll check it out.
I will post it in the chat.
if you're wondering,
go ahead.
There's an FAQ, and then one of the questions is this fireproof? And their answer is, the outermost case of our product is made from a fireproof material, UL94V0.
Okay.
Really?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you.
You got to test that.
Yeah, it doesn't. I set a Jackery on fire. This video is sponsored by Jackery.
Jackery. Just make a big bonfire and toss it in and see what happens.
Oh, they would not be happy about that. But it does. It does kind of get
sponsored by the Smokeless Pit guys.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
the Smokeless Pit, the Solo Stove guys.
Yeah. Solo Stove.
It does worry me a little bit to have that like big ass battery fully charged just cooking out there in the garage, where it's like 100 degrees.
Although their promotional material here, it's got like pictures of it in the desert.
Yeah. And it's not like it's under direct sunlight.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Let's see. They had like a temperature range. Oh, no. They just said it's resilient and cold to minus 20. But they don't have an upward limit on that.
Dude, that thing is heavy, though. I mean, it's got to be.
Dude, it's probably just a brick of lithium.
50, 60 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, it has wheels and a handle to give you an idea of how heavy it is.
How much is the cheaper one?
I don't know.
God, man, they're all pretty expensive.
They got a bunch of them. And the best thing is they're not, like, a non-compete. So you could do, like, an EcoFlow, a Jackery, You could do all of those.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You can get the 290 for 250.
Okay, okay. That's more in my price range.
That looks like you'd run like you like charge some phones and stuff off of it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's some lights. Small plug. Yeah.
A 110 volt plug.
Okay, okay. You'd charge your laptop, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be good for like camping though.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
I think the one I have, you're supposed to be able to run like an RV off of it.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I do love the idea of glamping. I've never actually done it, but like, you know, going out somewhere with a big tent and then bring like a margarita mixer, TV, a boombox.
Yeah, you've seen Parks and Rec, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or Tom goes to the camping. He has like the TV and the couch and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Oh, I almost forgot to remind people that that was a bad segue. Okay, we have new patrons this week.
Oh boy!
Yeah, a rigid fan, Seth Keedle.
I saw that. I saw that.
Which, actually, if I'm not mistaken, I've heard that name on other woodworking podcasts, and I couldn't tell you which one.
Interesting.
So, what a gentleman!
Yeah, for
supporting the multiple people in the community. We appreciate that. Yeah, thanks, Seth. We also have a returning top tier patrons, Brooke Appler at Grizzly Bear Woodworks, Dadu, who said that he just got his shirt in the mail.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. Luke Schmidt, Corey Duvall, Jason Price at Priceless Pro Designs, Scott Eastman at EC's Woodshop, and of course, the Power Cocker, formerly known as Wes.
Hallelujah.
And those are our top tier patrons and just some of the patrons that have unlocked the after show.
Great verbiage. Is that a verb?
Sure.
Unlocked. Yes, I think. I failed English.
Which is where we are headed now.
That's right. See everybody.
We got anything else to say? Is that it?
Send us some questions, patrons. Please send us some questions. This might be a short after show because we are running a little bit low. And send us your woodworking questions too. It doesn't have to just be would you rathers.
Yeah, would you rathers.
I'll have your 240 volt Jackery answer in the after show.
Is that what I think it is on screen right now? Okay. Okay.
Ooh.
Turns out you just wire two of them together.
He didn't say it. He didn't say it.
I have some grievances that I want.
Podcast to unlock the after show now.
That's right, in Discord.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
See you, everybody. Peace out.